Welcome to the Geeky Grandma with an Encouraging Nudge podcast. Hi, my name is Jill McCarthy from Central New York State, and this is our 53rd podcast. This morning, my guest is Vicki Mizell, and my goodness, does she have a lot of stories to tell. Let me read her bio, and then we'll get started. Vicki was born and raised in Tulsa, Oklahoma. She was trained as an educator, psychologist, actor, public speaker. Her undergraduate degree was from the University of Oregon in Eugene, and her master's in psychology was completed in 2000 in Antioch University in Marina del Rey, California. She has been teaching her Brain Sprouts Memory System since 1983. The memory method is known with time and practice to increase neuroconnectivity and neuroregeneration in the brain and enhance the brain activity and healing. Throughout her career, she has worked with school children, university students, CEOs of companies, and actors, as well as brain-injured, dementia, and Alzheimer's patients. She has been an educator, artist, actress, speaker, and now a writer over the span of 40 years. Well, welcome, Vicki.
Thank you, Jill. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I met Vicki through kind of a mutual acquaintance. I think Vicki knows her way farther than I do, and I was introduced to her. You need to meet this interesting lady, and she certainly is.
Oh, thank you. It's Angel Tessie who introduced us.
Yes, and I've met her through Deborah Drummond, who was been a guest on our podcast, and I'm going to be on one of her summits. And that's a wonderful group of people that as soon as you meet one, you end up meeting another and another. And then if you need a service, they refer you to another. I have one from that group who's now building my podcast. So it's a wealth of wonderfully talented women. So you among them. So
thank you.
Angel says, you've got to hear about this gal and her sibling. She's got quite a story to tell. And the sibling is her brother. And it goes back to the time of COVID. So we're going to let Vicki start out there on our adventure. Go for it, Vicki.
Okay. Well, it was April 5th of 2020, right at the beginning of the pandemic. And I knew my brother wasn't feeling well. I had talked to him the night before and waited on the phone while the ambulance came to take him to the hospital to get an IV because we thought he was just dehydrated. And I was supposed to hear from him when he got released the next day, didn't hear from him, couldn't reach him. And then the second day that I was wondering what was happening, I get a phone call from a doctor at Mount Sinai. And she says, Vicki, is this Vicki Mizell, Gary's sister? I said, yes. She said, we have your brother here at Mount Sinai. He's in hospice. He's got COVID. And we think he has about 5 days to live. And we think it's best you don't come. And we have a cell phone here and you can just keep him company and watch him die over the phone. And I said, I don't think so. I'm coming. They said, it's really too dangerous. And I said, well, let me think about it. I'll call you back. I was in Gold Beach, Oregon at the time, a very remote area. There was no COVID there. I took a walk on the beach and I thought about my life and I thought about all the memories of my brother and me together since we were kids. We were raised to be very close. And then I thought, you know what? I just don't want to be in the world without him. And so I went back. I called his spiritual teacher. I told him what was going on. He said, I'll put you in the light of the Most High and keep you safe. And I called them back and I just said, I understand the risks, but I don't want to be without my brother and I don't want him to be without me. So I flew into the pandemic where hundreds of bodies were dying a day to see my brother. So they basically parted the seas for us. I mean, there were husbands and wives they wouldn't let see each other and they let me see my brother. And when I got into the room, he didn't recognize me, you know, because you've got masks and gowns and head dresses and gloves and everything. So I actually removed my mask for a minute and he said, Vicki, you're here. And I said, yes. I said, I love you so much. You're more important to me than anyone in the whole world. And he took my hand and he said, I want to be released to you. And I want you to get me the nutritional support I need to help my body fight the virus. And I said, okay, I'll ask. So I asked if I could have him, you know, go home. And they said it would cost $100,000 because he had to be on the respirator. He could not breathe on his own at all. And we'd have to hire a private nurse. And we just didn't have that kind of money. I said, well, it's better he stay in the hospital. And then I called our Dr. Timothy Binder. He's a homeopath. He's been in my life since I was 18. And he's a homeopath, a chiropractor, an acupuncturist, and a naturopath. And I told him what was happening with Gary, and he stopped everything. And he spent an hour with me on the phone. He told me every single nutrient to get, every type of tincture. He told me what it would do for him, what the benefit would be. So I got everything. And I called the doctor and told, gave them the list, and they would only approve 4 out of the 12 nutrients. And then, but they did approve something called Kate Farm drinks. And I had knew about those. They're a terrific liquid nutritional source that even ALS patients live on. And so I decided to sneak the rest of the nutrition in my bra and take it into the hospital room. And my brother just went like this and held out his hand and took the vitamins and just drank it. And then when I gave him the Kate Farms, he made a Popeye sign. And I knew we were on the right track. So I did this every day for 10 days, went to the hospital, gathered all the nutrition, and would sometimes wait as long as an hour to be able to go up and then put on the gown and take off the gown. And it was a really important time to be able to be face to face. And, you know, every day I didn't know if he'd be alive or not. So I had to think, what's the most important thing to say to him today in the 15 minutes that we had together? And then on the 10th day, the doctor called and said, well, your brother's doing better. He's still on the respirator, though. And but he's out of hospice. So now you can't see him because we would only let you see him because he was dying. Now he's not dying, so you can't see him.
Go figure.
So I called Dr. Binder. I said, now what do I do? And he said, put the nutrients in the Kate Farm drinks and then have those taken up. So that's what I did. I woke up every morning and emptied the little capsules and, you know, put everything in the drinks and would shake them up and then take it to him and then call to make sure the nurse took it into his room and to make sure he drank it. And then there were a lot of other little things going on too. My brother has a bipolar schizoaffective disorder. So there were moments that when his food would get mixed up, sometimes he's supposed to get double protein. In the beginning, they weren't giving him any protein at all. And he would end up getting food from a Glen Jones. And instead of just realizing that the kitchen would just made a mistake, he thought the CIA and the FBI were interfering with him getting his food. And the nurse would call me and she said, I don't know if you're aware of this, but your brother's talking to the TV and he thinks the CIA is messing with his food. I said, don't worry about it. It's been going on for 26 years. It's harmless. It's nothing. She said, well, we want to get an evaluation with a psychiatrist. And I said, well, he was on meds for 26 years and did a good job with it. And then he just decided he didn't want to be on meds anymore. So you can do whatever you want to do, but he won't go back on meds. And quite honestly, I didn't mind because when you take meds for that many years, it affects the liver. And so he's been off about 7 years now. So he's very lucid. He's very clear. He knows what's going on. And then he just thinks, you know, this other aspect is going on, which keeps it very interesting.
I'm sure.
Finally, on the 28th day, unbeknownst to him, they had been turning down his oxygen little by little by little by little. And on the 28th day, it was a miracle. He was able to breathe on his own.
Wow.
And they called him the miracle man. And then he was released to go to rehab. Because when you've been in bed that long, you literally can't hold up your head. Your legs don't work anymore. So he had to go to rehab to learn how to walk again and hold his head up again.
Wow, what an amazing story. And what a dedication and love between the two of you.
Yeah, we're very lucky. Our mom wanted me to be his companion. She basically had me for him. And when we grew up, she wanted to make sure we got along. We weren't jealous of each other. So on his birthday, my grandpa would give me a present. And on my birthday, grandpa would give him a present. And my mom would let me do whatever she let my brother do. She didn't want there to be any rivalry between us. So we were raised to be close, and we just kept it going even after our parents passed away.
Wow. You told me a little more about your mom and what your mom did about her life dreams. And I think that really plays into the relationship between you and your brother, why even more so why you were connected. Could you tell me a little bit about your mom and her thoughts about life dreams?
Yeah, our mom was a really special and unique and beautiful woman. And actually, the Christmas after she passed away, the movie Superman came out. And when Superman was putting his child into the capsule with the crystal that had all the knowledge of his home, and he said, you know, I bring you everything. I bring you life and goodness and our history and our your capacity and all knowledge. And I want you to love and be the best that you can be and have all of you available to yourself. My brother and I in the movie literally took each other's hand and squeezed it, because it was as if our mother was talking to us. And that's what she wanted. She wanted us, she said, I want you to have good insides, and I want you to be able to be fully self-expressed. And she would bring us the best of everything. If there were artists coming to Tulsa, she would invite them to our home for dinner to be able to share their art and their thinking and the passion that they had over what they did. And I remember asking my mom one day, I think I was 12, and I said, Mommy, how do you know when you're in your career? How do you know it's the one that you're supposed to do? And she said, Honey, you're in your career when you love it so much, you would do it whether you got paid for it or not. Our mother was beautiful, smart, talented. She was an actress. She was a singer. And she was such a beauty that she was a beauty queen in the USO.
Okay.
USO beauty queen, a pinup girl. And she had dreams literally to be an actress in Hollywood and to make movies and to be like Maureen O'Hara. And her father was very poor, but somehow he was able to get voice lessons for her when she was a child. She was in all the plays at school. She was in all the operettas. Years later, I read her yearbook, and they'd all say, you sing like a canary, and we really see you going places. And that really was her dream. And unfortunately, one of the things about, I think, all the children who grew up from immigrants, my grandparents were from Poland and Russia. They were Jewish. Both my grandparents on both sides lost their parents, you know, to Hitler. And so they really wanted to live the American dream, but most of them, it was hard to get a leg up. So they really counted on their children to help them. So my mom, at the age of 18, she was in Milwaukee. She went on to Chicago and she started singing in clubs and kind of got her feet wet. It was not really a happy time. I mean, it was a happy time that she was on her own and she was getting telegrams of, you were great and this is wonderful. But she said that because she was poor, she had to borrow friends' dresses and the sleeves were coming down when she was singing, and she was hanging out with musicians and they were offering her tea, which was marijuana at that time. So, you know, it was a little bit scary for a naive, you know, young woman from Milwaukee. But her parents were able somehow to get enough money together, and they all moved to Los Angeles so she could have her dream. And then meanwhile, my father had a business crony named Harry Miller, and Harry married Charlotte, who was my mother's first cousin. And he saw that picture of my mom as the USO pinup girl, and he said, I'm going to marry her. He just took one look. So he traveled to Milwaukee to see her and meet her parents, and then he traveled to LA. And then one day he said, I'm tired of traveling. You know, let's just get married. And he had also set up a screening for my mother with one of his army buddies.
Today's episode is being sponsored by Turtlefly Creations, a place for introverted metamorphosis, and it expresses itself through many modalities. We are the umbrella company for the Geeky Grandma with an Encouraging Nudge podcast, the Empowering Women Facebook group, and the Heart's Desires Retreats. We are a service that encourages, inspires, and empowers women from around the world. And now, back to the show.
And she was supposed to take a screen test. And then somebody said to her, you know, nice girls aren't in this business. Because in those days, you know, and stuff like that. And it scared her. It really did scare her. But she felt like she really wanted to stay in LA. She'd just gotten there and she really wanted a chance, you know, to audition and go for parts and to do things. And her parents, well, her mother especially, just said, you know, Sammy's such a nice man. And we, you know, were poor and we really would like you. His family had a little money from his dad was in the grocery business. And then they got in the oil business. So they kind of encouraged her, and her brother said, we really think that you should marry Sammy. And my mother told me the story many years later when I was older. And I said, what did you do, Mommy? And she said, I called him and told him that I would marry him. And then I got off the phone and cried.
Ooh.
Yeah. So she gave up her dream, and she ended up getting sick. My dad did everything he could to win her. And one of the things he did, which, you know, in retrospect, you know, some people say, oh, how cute. But my mother wanted somebody who was emotionally demonstrative and had emotional capacity truly to love and be self-expressive. And my dad hired an army buddy to write love letters for her. And she didn't find that out until after they were married. And my dad did not have the emotional capacity to love in the way she needed. So her body reacted. She ended up with a overactive thyroid. In those days, everybody went to Mayo Clinic, and she just didn't have anyone in her corner to support her. You know, she found out years later, if she would have just taken radioactive iodine, she would have been okay. But instead, it was a very butchered, very barbaric operation. And she had to stay awake, and they gave her ether while they were cutting to make sure. And she had to talk, and the saliva was, you know, going down, and she's gurgling and swallowing and the blood and while she's talking to make sure they don't cut her vocal cords. And they ended up cutting too much of her thyroid out. And so from that point on, she'd been very healthy. She ended up with headaches, migraines, really bad migraines. Her eyes were very big. They would pop. And she had something called myxedema, which would be water under the skin. And so she suffered literally the rest of her life because of that operation. And she tried to make it work with my dad. And I found out, not until after she had passed away, that my dad's father knew it was a mistake. And he offered her $30,000 to leave my dad and go back to Hollywood and really try to give herself, make a career for herself.
Wow.
But my mom had been trained so much to think of others before herself that she was afraid it would hurt him too much. And she didn't. And, you know, all these stories just made me so sad to hear. And then my brother said, well, if she hadn't stayed, then you wouldn't have been born. So my mom literally started reading up on Adele Davis, everything she could about health, everything she could about nutrition, and got my brother and I started on vitamins by the time I was 5 years old. He and I were having vitamin contests, see who could take more vitamins at once. And she dedicated herself just to be the best mom she could be, gave us lessons of anything that we were interested in doing. We both went to camp in the summer. I went to ice skating and ballet and tap dance and, you know, all the things little girls like. And my brother was very good at sports and very good at writing. So basically, she just, I think she decided that she would just stay alive long enough until I was on my own. And she did pass away when I was 22. She had another horrible situation with doctors, and then she had a kidney failure because she'd been on so much medication, pain medication. And then they operated and cut the nerve endings in her feet and then left her crippled. And she just didn't want to live like that. She just didn't want to live like that.
Wow. What a story. I can't even get the right words to describe it. So many different feelings and sad things. And one of the reasons I'm going to talk to the audience for a minute, that after I knew Vicki was going to be our guest and she told me about her mom, so many times I keep trying to talk to you out there, the listeners, and to nudge you to follow your dreams. And this is probably a case on steroids of what happens when you don't follow your dreams, so when you give up on them and you go in a path that you know isn't what your heart wanted. It happened many times, especially years ago, and I can't say it doesn't happen now, but the body knows when your emotions aren't being fed, and it creates illness, and eventually that illness can take your life, in essence. And that's one reason I personally have seen what happens when you don't know how to deal with those emotions, when you don't feel free to express them, how it affects your body. But I also want to say that you can reverse that process, especially if you stay at it, and the earlier you start at it, the better. I used to stuff the pain in my arm and in my throat in particular, and my arm just got like hard as rocks, and it hurt so bad. And inch by inch, I've loosened those muscles. And I've done it through a mind and body program. You talked about nutrition and how important that was to you and your brother. And eventually it led to that turning around in that COVID situation. But passions, they're kind of like a fuel for your heart. And sometimes we get so busy taking care of everyone else. That was another part in your story, that women have been trained to do that. It's generationally almost imprinted in us. Our current generation, the baby boomers and such, we've helped to turn that process around. We've said, hey, wait a minute. I don't want to abandon my life. I have passions. I want to go for my dreams. I might make it, I might not. But if I don't go for it, I'll never know. And sometimes that path does change as you go along the way, but it's just because you're growing with it, not because you're abandoning it.
Yeah, I think that we're born knowing what we're supposed to do, that everyone's born with a purpose of what their natural talent, gift, and abilities are. But we get talked out of it. You know,
absolutely.
I always said, I want to be an actress. And they were like, well, you know, 1% make it. And, you know, I don't know if you really should pursue that. You should go with something, you know, more steady, like being a teacher, you know, or something. Or I want to be a speaker. Well, the world didn't have people as speakers in when I was 20. But I said, I know I want to be a speaker. But, you know, I was like, well, be a teacher, because then you can be a speaker. So I was a teacher and I really enjoyed being a teacher. It was really fun. And then I got to experience all kids of all walks of life that I wouldn't otherwise had had the experience with. But on the side, I was still acting, doing seminars, speaking, doing things like that. So what I want to say to the audience is, if you're not sure what you want, so many people got lost after COVID. They lost their job, they lost their way, they weren't sure what's next. And also people my age that are in their 60s and they've retired, some of them don't have a plan of what to retire to. The first thing that I ask people in my Passion Quest program, which I designed a program, a series of questions to help people get in touch with what they really wanted, what they want today, what their natural talents and skills are, what really makes them feel alive and happy inside. And then if they could wave the magic wand, independent of time, money, other people's projections of what they should do, write down what they want, the emotions and feelings they want to feel, the qualities and values they want to have, and then draw a picture of the end result of what they want to see happen. And then in the class, everyone brings their picture back the second time and they act out like an improv of a day in the life of their life. But the first question I ask them is, what did you want to do when you were 5 years old? And are you doing that now? And if not, why not? You know, and what is it? And then the second question is, what are your earliest, happiest memories? Some people didn't have happy memories. So I would say, what memories made you feel most proud of yourself? And then have everybody write down in detail the answers to the questions. And then the third question is, what makes you feel most at home within yourself? And some people say taking a walk or being with family or doing some kind of outdoor recreation. And I remember a girlfriend of mine when I was in San Diego, which is where I first got started with all of my kind of got my wings and started flying first. She had known me since I was a little girl. And here I was about 26, and she saw me on stage teaching a memory class. And afterwards we chatted and she said, I've never seen you more yourself than when you are on stage.
Wow.
And people would say to me, you know, your eyes light up the stage, your smile lights up the stage, you have such a presence now. And that for me is a place where I feel at home inside myself. And then the last question is, of all the answers that you have, what's come clear to you about yourself? And some of my early happy memories had to do with my grandfather and playing with him. And he built me a swimming pool and taught me how to swim. And so I have memories of jumping in the pool into his arms, you know, and the coolness of the water and the wet of the spray and the sun shining down. And so I realized that for me, a certain kind of freedom, a feeling of aliveness, when I have one person in my corner that's really encouraging me, those are some of the formulas that really help me to be successful. So that's what I would say to people is really think about your earliest, happiest memories, what you wanted to be when you were little, and don't talk yourself out of it. Don't let all those shoulds and coulds and how am I going to do it? You know, I mean, there's so many stories of Melissa McCarthy basically said that she went to Hollywood, I think, with, you know, $100 or New York, with $100 in her pocket. But her dream was so vivid of what she wanted. And there are many, many stories like that where people just take the risk and go for it.
Are you a tender-hearted, gentle woman? Maybe you're an introvert, an HSP, or a projector? Perhaps you're an empath and you're sensitive to the energy wherever you go, and you wish you knew how to navigate this world in a safer way for yourself. Well, I'd love to hear your story and to let you know that you can be seen and heard and that you have value. We could do that if you reach out to me for a coffee chat. You could send me a message through Jill McCarthy through Messenger, or through my email address, mmccar@twcny.rr.com. But for now, let's go back to the conclusion of our show. Right. Those vivid examples really, really help to solidify that. What would it feel like in the day of the water splashing on you? You could feel your grandpa's hug, and all of those types of things really helped to cement it. When I was at that 5-6 year old age, I remember I would say like it was after first grade, and I could just barely read, taking a little kid's book and sitting down and copying the words and trying to draw the pictures. I was in seventh heaven. I was writing a book. Okay, I was copying a book, but I felt really good. And I have a graphic novel in the background that I keep working on. And I hope maybe this summer I can do a little more. But, you know, when you're on the right thing, you feel excited. And like you said, your eyes light up and you just become alive. And I almost feel the chill bumps coming. So. And you obviously are a very good speaker because I just basically said, go for it. And you did. And you've had much experience sharing your story. And you were raised to be able to express yourself. And unfortunately, many of you ladies in the audience have at least spent a part of your life when you didn't feel free to fully express yourself, or you just got so busy taking care of everyone else that you forgot to, and if you stuffed it down, it probably hurt you, maybe an autoimmune or who knows what. But we're rooting for you. We want to encourage you on. Vicki here is giving you that nudge to spark you back into some ideas. She has classes to work. I do encouragement to women, especially those that are on this side of their career that now have free time. This is a chance of a whole forever time, because now we have a longer lifespan, more or less, than women have ever had before. And we want you to make the most of every minute and every day that you have. And we thank you.
Jill, my Passion Quest program is in my book, the first book that I wrote called Love Remembers. So people can go to Amazon, Love Remembers by Vicki Mizell. Because now there's two other people who wrote books called Love Remembers. But I tell the first, the beginning of the book is how I tell the story of how I ended up brain injured after I had a supersonic memory. And then I got hit by a Big Rig truck. And the second half of the book is the whole memory system of how it works and how it regenerates the brain and how I recovered, teaching Alzheimer's and older adults the memory course when I was struggling, and we all got better together. And then part two of Love Remembers is the whole Passion Quest program. I tell the story of my mom, and then I have the actual exercises in the book, as well as offering classes and privates.
This lady is so amazing. When I invited her to be a guest on my podcast, she didn't say, oh, what am I going to talk about? She says, which of these stories would you like to hear? Because, you know, she's gone for them. She spent her life looking for these passions, helping other people. And even if it's an illness or a brain injury or whatever, she just keeps picking back up and taking that hope in and going forward.
You know, a lot of it, besides it being my mother's influence, is really my grandparents' influence, you know, which is, it's a miracle that I was born. It's a miracle they survived being able to come across the boat to America. And my mother said, you know, your duty is to make the world a better place than when you came. And so that's really been the part of me that whatever happens to me, I just feel like I need to keep going and keep recovering. And then each recovery, I say, oh, I could help someone else do this, you know, so.
Yeah, just amazing to have you on our program. I love your Passion Quest. Someday we might even join together forces. And
you know, I would absolutely love that. I prefer, now that I'm, you know, done so much on my own, my preference literally is to share, to be able to combine talents with someone and resources and bring it to even more people.
Right. I could really see many of our ideas kind of melding together. And what a synergy is so wonderful. It's amazing what might come out of that. So
I agree.
Well, we're going to have to sign off for now. So thank you for being my guest. And I hope to somehow deal with you, work with you at some point in the future.
Yeah, we can plan on that. And then just for people to remember, If you're not sure what you want to do, just get quiet and listen to that little voice inside. And that little voice inside is your intuition, and it will guide you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Jill.
Bye-bye.
See you in the funny papers. Bye-bye for now.